My voice was fine earlier. It's just at church time, it naturally enough. All right, 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel 17. 2 Samuel chapter 17. And Absalom has come to power. David has abdicated the throne. And meanwhile, Ahithophel is counseling for Absalom against David. And the last thing we were reading last time was down in verse 23, that when Ahithophel saw that his counsel, that it was counsel for war, he went one way, Hushai went the other, and Absalom and his council of war decided that Hushai's counsel was better. And so Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, saddled his ass and arose and got him home to his house, to his city, put his household in order and hanged himself and died, was buried in the sepulcher of his father. We were covering last time how, you know, it's basically his own agenda, an embittered man who was truly wronged and knew the depths of what happened with David and Bathsheba. Again, a kinship between he and Bathsheba. And so a terrible, terrible thing. Nonetheless, God still had David on the throne and the Lord still was blessing David. And Ahithophel wanted to destroy David, and it just Ahithophel made a mess of things. Self-destructive, killed himself like Judas Iscariot, right? So, verse 24 then. Then David came to Mahanaim. Okay, David is fleeing Jerusalem. I drew this map so you would see the rough relation. This is Jerusalem. That's Mahanaim. Mahanaim is the place that Jacob came to when he was fleeing after he left Laban. And he was met there. He was met there by a host of God. And so Mahanaim means two hosts. So you've got Jacob's host and the Lord's host. And so now David has gone there, but that's where he's landed. Also, Mahanaim was the place where Ish-bosheth went and ruled once the kingdom broke. And so it's a place, apparently, I don't know much about the topography or anything like that, but David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom passed over Jordan, he and all the men of Israel with him. So they've both crossed Jordan. David's here, and Absalom is somewhere here trying to pursue David down into the ground. And Absalom made Amasa captain of the host instead of Joab. Joab's still with David, although later he betrays him. But Joab's still with David, and so Absalom needs a captain of his host, and so Amasa's the man chosen. Which Amasa, verse 25, was a man's son whose name was Ithra, an Israelite, that went into Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister to Zariah, Joab's mother. So, long way of saying, David's sister Zariah. He also had a sister named Abigail. Okay, Zariah was Joab, Azahel, and Abishai's mother. It's David's sister. And Abigail is Amasa's mother. So, David is uncle to Joab, Abishai, and Azahel, and Joab and Amasa are then cousins. It's all in the family, which probably was part of the problem. A verse, I wanted to show you another verse on that, just so you know what I'm talking about. First Chronicles 2. 1 Chronicles 2, if all that was a little confusing, then it kind of clarifies things here. 1 Chronicles chapter 2, notice, listing David's brothers in verse 13, 14, and 15. Verse 16, whose sisters, David's sisters, were Zariah and Abigail. And the sons of Zariah, Abishai, Joab, and Azahel, three. And Abigail bare Amasa. And the father of Amasa was Jether the Ishmaelite. So, you know the relation now. It's all in the family. Verse 26. So Israel and Absalom pitched in the land of Gilead. That land east of the Jordan River is the land of Gilead. Verse 27. It came to pass when David was come to Mahanaim that Shobi, the son of Nahash of Rabbah, of the children of Ammon, and Maker, the son of Amiel of Lodabar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite of Rogelim, brought beds, etc., etc. So you have all these names of all this stuff. It's just easy to read that stuff through and miss something really kind of important. Go back, if you will, to, first of all, let's look at Shobi. Okay, who's he? Well, he's actually not mentioned, but there is somebody very near him mentioned. Go back to 2 Samuel 10. And Shobi is the son of Nahash of Rabbah. Nahash is the king of the Ammonites. And so he is his son. And you will notice in chapter 10, verse 1, among other things, now just keep the name in mind and make this connection. It came to pass after this that the king of the children of Ammon died, and Hunan, his son, reigned in his stead. Then said David, I will show kindness unto Hanun, the son of Nahash, there's the man we just mentioned, as his father showed kindness unto me. And David sent to comfort him by the hand of his servants for his father. And David's servants came unto the land of the children of Ammon. And the princes of the children of Ammon said unto Hanun, their lord, thinkest thou that David doth honor thy father, that he hath sent comforters unto thee? Hath not David rather sent his servants unto thee to search the city and to spy it out and overthrow it? Therefore Hanun took David's servants and shaved off the one half of their beards, cut off their garments in the middle, even to their buttocks, and sent them away. So a very disgraced and shameful thing to do. It started a war. But importantly, when Nahash dies, David sends unto his king his son, who's king now, Hanun. Now, what you're not told is that Shobi, look in chapter 17, verse 27. Now, Shobi is the son of Nahash, too. Shobi's not a king or a prince or anything like that, but apparently, Shobi was there when David sent his salutations for the death of his father. And his brother Hanun was ill-advised and wound up shaming and disgracing the ambassadors that David sent. But I just want you to see that back in 10:2, notice the specificity here. Then said David, I will show kindness. So David's showing kindness when he's strong to somebody that might have been considered an enemy and turned out to be an enemy in the future. But he sowed kindness. So there came a day that David was down, and I don't even know if David noticed Shobi in the background, but Shobi saw this thing where David had sent for the funeral of his father, and his brother, the king, disgraced the servants. But David showed kindness, and so there came a day that David was in trouble, and this guy sowed kindness back. So you reap what you sow. Now there's another guy here in the passage in 2 Samuel chapter 27. And again, it's easy to read through these names and go, ooh, what does that matter? Well, matters if you can spot Shobi in the shadows of the throne room as David's ambassador comes in to give their condolences for the bereaved of the family. And it didn't work out for them because Hanun disgraced them, right? There's another guy, and his name is Maker, the son of Amiel of Lodabar. Now, you may not remember him, but go back in 2 Samuel chapter 9. And in back-to-back chapters, David does the same thing. He sows kindness. David said, 9:1, is there yet any that is left of the house of Saul? David is just getting on the throne, just establishing himself, that I may show him kindness. There's a second time, kindness in 9:1, kindness in 10:2. For Jonathan's sake, is there anybody in Jonathan's house that I can show kindness to? There was of the house of Saul a servant whose name was Ziba. And when they had called him unto David, the king said unto him, art thou Ziba? And he said, thy servant is he. The king said, is there not yet any of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God unto him? And Ziba said unto the king, Jonathan hath yet a son, which is lame on his feet. And the king said unto him, where is he? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he is in the house of Maker, the son of Amiel, and Lodabar. Now we know that son is Mephibosheth. But he's in the house of Maker, the son of Amiel, and Lodabar. And so, verse 5, then King David sent and fetched him out of the house of Maker, the son of Amiel from Lodabar. Now when Mephibosheth and the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, was come unto David, he fell on his face and did reverence. So here's this picture of this magnificent set of carriages that show up in some low-life village in some huddle of a place. And in that is, that's Maker's house. And in that place lies Mephibosheth. And David goes in, sends those men in there, and they carry him out and put him basically in royal apparel and take him home to eat for the rest of his life in David's house. And Maker didn't forget it. Whatever else is the case, the day came that David's on the run, things are bad, but Shobi shows up because of what he saw in the Ammonites' throne room. And Maker shows up from the kindness he saw from David on Mephibosheth in his own house, and they both sow kindness back. So you reap what you sow, so maybe one of the things that you should sow is kindness. All right, back to 2 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 27. It came to pass when David was come to Mahanaim that Shobi the son of Nahash of Rabbah of the children of Ammon, and Maker the son of Amiel of Lodabar, and Barzillai the Gileadite of Rogelim. You say, is there a connection there? I couldn't find a thing about Barzillai. He's just an old guy that David later, that David wanted to come with him when he gets the kingdom back, and Barzillai said, I'm old, I'm so old I can't even taste food anymore. So just let me go home. But Barzillai was part of that, and you wonder if David hadn't sown kindness in the lives of Shobi and Maker, if maybe Barzillai wouldn't have shown up, because Barzillai was like a bonus. Verse 28. Those guys brought beds and basins and earthen vessels, and my Bible informs me that the basins weren't basins, they were cups. I'm so grateful for that. Basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched corn and beans and lentils and parched pulse and honey and butter and sheep and cheese of kine for David and for the people that were with him to eat, for they said, the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. And 18:1, David numbered the people that were with him and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds. So he's got hundreds with him. He's got thousands with him. He sets captains of them. And I don't know how that worked exactly, but in the modern military, usually a squad is 8 to 14 guys, a platoon is 15 to 30 guys, and then in a company there are 4 to 7 platoons per company. Then you move up to the battalion level and you have 500 to 1,000 guys. So when you're splitting up your army into hundreds and thousands, you've still got a pretty good army. 18:2, and David sent forth a third part of the people under the hand of Joab, you would have expected that. A third part under the hand of Abishai, the son of Zariah, Joab's brother, Probably would have expected that. Joab's not said to be a mighty man and not listed in the mighty men's list, but Abishai is. And then the third part under the hand of Ittai the Gittite, the guy that David tried to send home because he just arrived. He was a Gittite. He was from Gath. He's the head over, you know, whatever Philistines came with him. And Ittai said, I ain't going home. I'm with you no matter if we just did get here today. And by the time this is over, Ittai winds up over a third of the army. So faithfulness counts for something, right? Verse 2. And a third part of the under the hand of Ittai the Gittite. The king said unto the people, I will surely go forth with you myself also. And the people answered, Thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us, neither will they, neither, if half of us die, will they care for us. But now thou art worth 10,000 of us, therefore now it is better that thou succor us out of the city. Okay, so that is, there's some pretty strong topology there for David being a type of Jesus Christ, which he is. First of all, here you have a king, right? The king has willingly relinquished his throne for a while. Jesus Christ relinquished part of his kingdom. What could have been his, the devil's got right now the god of this world, right? David is sent to succor, down in the verse 3, to succor us out of the city. And Jesus Christ succors us from heaven, right? So David's a type of Christ. The 10,000, thou art worth, verse 3, 10,000 of us. That's he cometh with 10,000 of his saints. It points to the second advent of Christ. It's kind of interesting that, here you have Mahanaim. They're at Mahanaim. It means two hosts. That's because Jacob shows up there with his host, and then the Lord had his host meet him there as he's going into the land. So now you're back here, and there's the host of Absalom, and there's the host of David. So once again, two hosts, a type of the second advent of Christ. David there defeats Absalom, a type of Christ. Kind of cool. And then I got thinking, okay, Absalom is David's son from Judah. We know that, and we're not going to do the Bible study tonight, but we know that the Antichrist is a Syrian Jew, right? So it makes me wonder, since Absalom, a great type of the Antichrist, is from Judah, he's a Judean Jew, makes me wonder if the Antichrist will not only be an Assyrian, but also a Judean Jew from the same family of Israel, Judah, as Jesus Christ. And I can't prove it either way, but it's consistent with the topology, right? Again, he defeats a type of the Antichrist. Absalom winds up hanging from a tree. We'll go over that a little bit later. Not quite like Ahithophel hung or like Judas Iscariot hung, because they hung themselves. And they didn't die from being hanged, but or Absalom didn't die from being hanged, but he too was hanged. So it's just kind of interesting. Anyway, verse 3, but the people answered, Thou shalt not go forth, for if we flee away, they will not care for us, neither if half of us die will they care for us. But now thou art worth 10,000 of us, therefore now it is better that thou succor us, help us. That succor is found in Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 18, if you want to see that help. But thou succor us out of the city. And the king said unto them, What seemeth you best I will do. And so David yields to them. He's older now, and he says, well, you're right. All they have to do is get me to defeat us. So he went to the city. Verse 4, And the king said unto them, What seemeth to you best I will do. And the king stood by the gate side, and all the people came out by hundreds and by thousands. So there were thousands there. I don't know how many thousands were in David's army, but he had mighty men in that army, and I wouldn't have wanted to take them on. And the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man, even with Absalom. Deal gently for my sake. And so it's almost too much to ask. I mean, you're sending, you have a war on, and David's saying, if you have a chance, spare Absalom. And of course, it's showing his guilt, his weakness, that this is something that he just can't bring himself to imagine, the death of Absalom. Verse 5. And all the people heard it when the king gave all the captains charge concerning Absalom. So the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim. And so they've come now back across the river. Not sure why they crossed the river. They were lined up against each other over here, but they came over back over into the wood of Ephraim. So here's Jerusalem. That's Judea. But Israel is right, or Ephraim is right above that. So it's somewhere in this area that this battle's fought, and it specifies the wood of Ephraim. And so it's forest, where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David, and there was there a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. For the battle was there scattered, over the face of the country, and the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. And I'm not even sure what that meant. But one time the Lord gave Israel a victory with hailstones the size of bowling balls, right? And one time he gave them a victory when he just said, you know, all these Moabites are lined up, and the Moabites saw that the Lord had turned all the water in the valley to blood, and so they think there's been a slaying, and they walk right into a trap, and the Israelites kill them. And so the Lord has his ways, right? And I don't know how this worked, but the battle was there scattered. Maybe all of these guys wound up hung in a tree. I don't know. But it says the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. I'd like to see that, a replay of that battle. Verse 9. And Absalom met the servants of David. And Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak, and his head caught hold of the oak. Now most people I've heard attribute it to his hair, because he apparently had a lot of hair on his head, and maybe that's what happened. I have yet to see anybody hanging from a tree by his hair. I don't know, maybe the other possibility is that he rides himself into the fork of a tree that he couldn't back out of, and so he's standing there hanging by his head. I'm not quite sure how this worked, but the Bible says it's so, right? His head caught hold of the oak. The oak didn't catch hold of his head. His head caught hold of the oak. So imagining that in literalness is a little different. But caught hold of the oak, and he was taken up between the heaven and the earth, and the mule that was under him went away. Of course it did. That's what a mule would do. And a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, "Behold, I saw Absalom hanged in an oak." And Joab said unto the man that told him, And behold, thou sawest him, and why didst thou not smite him there to the ground? And I would have given thee 10 shekels of silver and a girdle. And the man said unto Joab, "Though I should receive 1,000 shekels of silver in mine hand, yet would I not put forth mine hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king charged thee and Abishai and Ittai, saying, beware that none touch the young man Absalom." So everybody heard it. "Otherwise I should have wrought falsehood against mine own life, for there is no matter hid from the king, and thou thyself wouldst have set thyself against me." He said, if I had done that, you would have killed me yourself. Verse 14, then said Joab, "I may not tarry thus with thee." Shut up. I ain't talking to you anymore. Get back to your unit. And Joab said, "I may not tarry thus with thee." He took 3 darts in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak. And 10 young men that bare Joab's armor compassed about and smote Absalom and slew him. So he stabs him and kills him, and then these 10 show up and start beating on him. Verse 16. And Joab blew the trumpet, and the people returned from pursuing after Israel, for Joab held back the people. So Joab's trying to return as much of Israel to David as he can. Once the snake's head is cut off, then it's dead. So he's hoping that he won't do more damage and kill a whole bunch of people. He'll return as many of the people to David as he can. And they took Absalom, verse 17, and cast him into a great pit in the wood, laid a very great heap of stones upon him, and Israel fled every one to his tent. They know that something was wrong was done there. But verse 18, now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and reared up for himself a pillar, which is in the king's dale, for he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. Now, only thing about that, go back to chapter 14, 2 Kings 14. I think I mentioned it earlier, so I don't have to go very deep into it here. But 2 Samuel, did I say Samuel? 2 Samuel 14. 2 Samuel 14, 27, where you read, and unto Absalom there were born three sons and one daughter, whose name was Tamar. And she was a woman of a fair countenance. So it says there that he did have sons. He did have three sons. So in verse 18 of 2 Samuel 18, Absalom in his lifetime had reared up this pillar, for he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. So either he reared that up before the sons were born, or else the sons had died, so he had no son left. Okay, it's not a contradiction. It's, well, duh. Right? Verse, but that's one of the famous contradictions of the King James Bible, just so you know. I have no son to keep my name, and he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called, unto this day, Absalom's Place. Sounds like a cheap bar. Verse 19. Then said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. This is Zadok's son, and this is one of the messengers that brought David, you know, information. And so he apparently feels like he should be the one to take news to David, only he really, we'll see in a second, but I don't think know if he has any news to take. Let me now run and bear the king tidings, how that the Lord hath avenged him of his enemies. And Joab said unto him, thou shalt not bear tidings this day, but thou shalt bear tidings another day. But this day thou shalt bear no tidings, because the king's son is dead. Yeah, whose fault is that? Some have set forth that maybe Ahimaaz is only supposed to be taking good news back or something like that. But anyway, we'll see more in a second. Verse 21. Then said Joab to Cushai, and we can't track Cushai. I tried to track him, and he has no genealogy that we know of. Then said Joab to Cushai, go tell the king what thou hast seen. And Cushai bowed himself to Joab and ran. And so maybe Joab thinks that Cushai is a better guy to send, because maybe he thinks that he won't tell it the way Ahimaaz. Maybe he suspected Ahimaaz that he's like a friend of David. So I'm not sure. But this is kind of wonky here, this passage, in the sense that verse 22, then said Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, get again to Joab. But howsoever, let me, I pray thee, also run after Cushai. And Joab said, wherefore wilt thou run, my son, seeing that thou hast no tidings ready? I mean, a messenger needs a message. I just want to run. Why? I just want to run. Verse 24, and David sat between the two gates, and the watchman went up to the roof over the gate into the wall and lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man running alone. So David's sitting between the outer wall and the inner wall over the gate. And the watchman cried, verse 25, and told the king, and the king said, if he be alone, there's tidings in his mouth. And he came apace and drew near. And the watchman saw another man running. And the watchman called unto the porter and said, behold, another man is running alone. And the king said, he also bringeth tidings. And the watchman said, methinketh the running of the foremost is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. And the king said, I mean, the king wants good news really bad, right? And the king said, he's a good man and cometh with good tidings. So that's why they say maybe he was only supposed to run with good tidings, Ahimaaz. And Ahimaaz called and said unto the king, all is well. Is it? Well, no. And he fell down to the earth upon his face before the king and said, blessed be the Lord God, thy God, which hath delivered up the men that lifted up their hand against my lord the king. So he knows they won. I don't know if he knows what happened or not. The king said, is the young man Absalom safe? And Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent the king's servant and me thy servant, I saw a great tumult, but I knew not what it was. So he either didn't know what happened or he chickened out in telling him. Probably didn't know what happened. Verse 30. King said unto him, turn aside and stand here. And he turned aside and stood still. And behold, Cushai came, and Cushai said, tidings, my lord, the king, for the Lord hath avenged thee this day of all them that rose up against thee. And the king said unto Cushai, is the young man Absalom safe? And Cushai answered, the enemies of my lord the king and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt be as that young man is. He's dead, they're dead. And the king was much moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he wept, thus he said, O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son. So you can only imagine the torment of David, who knew that he was the one that brought a great deal of this on Absalom's head, right? Four sons. Verse 1 of chapter 19. And it was told Joab, behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned unto mourning unto all the people, for the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son. So that's what sin does. It turns your victories into defeats. Verse 3. And the people get them by stealth that day into the city, as people being ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. So everybody's got their heads down instead of the celebration that could have been going on. But the king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son. And Joab came into the house to the king and said, here comes nephew Joab, who knows what David did and knows what he was ordered to do around the death of Uriah, right? And now he's gone out to battle and they've won a great victory. And he's the one that killed Absalom. And now he's going to step way over the line and bawl the king out. And Joab came to the house to the king and said, thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters and the lives of thy wives and the lives of thy concubines. I mean, he upbraided David seriously here. Verse 6, and that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends. Pretty impertinent. For thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants for this day. I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all of us had died this day, then it had pleased thee well. Now therefore arise, go forth and speak comfortably unto thy servants, for I swear by the Lord, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry one with thee this night, and that will be worse unto thee, than all the evil that befell thee from thy youth till now. And so he's probably right. You have won a big victory, then the king is weeping as if he lost. And so, it's not good, and so he's probably right. Verse 8, then the king rose and sat in the gate, and they told unto all the people, saying, behold, the king doth sit in the gate. That's a symbol, and it's a symbol that the king's ready to give a speech. And all the people came before the king, for Israel had fled every man to his tent. And all the people were at strife throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, the king saved us out of the hand of our enemies, and he delivered us out of the hand of the Philistines, and now he has fled out of the land for Absalom. And so it's all confusion now because it's just not checking out for them. I don't know if they all knew what had actually happened with David and Bathsheba and Uriah the Hittite and all the scandal and stuff. And so they're, you know, he delivered us from the Philistines. He delivered us from our enemies. And now he's fled the throne for Absalom. We don't understand. Verse 10. And Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now, therefore, why speak ye not a word of bringing the king back? And the king David sent to Zadok and to Abiathar the priest, saying, speak unto the elders of Judah, saying, why are ye the last to bring the king back into his house? David is putting it on them. You're my family. You're my tribe. How come you haven't stepped up to bring me back? As if it's their problem. It's not. It's his problem. But he's sending signals. I'll come if you'll ask. Verse 11. Why are ye the last to bring the king back into his house, seeing the speech of all Israel has come to the king, even to his house? Ye are my brethren. Ye are my bones and my flesh. Wherefore then are ye the last to bring back the king? Look down in verse 13. And say ye to Amasa, art thou not my bone and of my flesh? God do so to me, and more also, if thou be not captain of the host before me continually in the room of Joab. So Amasa steps up, and David signed his death warrant right there. And he bowed the heart of all the people of Judah, even as the heart of one man, so that they sent this word unto the king, return thou and all thy servants. So the king returned and came to Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal to go to meet the king, to conduct the king over Jordan. And we should pause there for tonight. It's almost time, and get into some things next time. But it's mostly reading.